Stripe is the go-to choice for AI companies, from early-stage startups to scaled enterprises. 78% of the leading AI companies use Stripe to go to market quickly and scale globally. That includes pioneers like NVIDIA, OpenAI, and Perplexity. Stripe has developed cutting-edge tools to improve everything from fraud detection to checkout optimization. Whether you're aiming for incremental gains or planning for enterprise transformation, see how Stripe can help at stripe.com.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
To kick things off, Adrian Walker is back with us, the associate editor and columnist with the Boston Globe, and our own tech correspondent, Jess Kelly. We might kick things off with, as I said, the new Pope, the American Pope, Adrian. So Donald Trump delighted straight out of the blocks on Truth Social, claiming ownership of the American Pope. He was probably disappointed it wasn't him.
I think he was disappointed it wasn't him. You know, he made himself available for the job.
Yeah, he did. Has it got much attention here?
Oh, it's gotten tons of attention here. I think American Catholics are over the moon about this. For one thing, they always thought that there would never be an American Pope. I mean, I think this has been a long-standing belief. So this came as a real shock to American Catholics. And I think, you know, the vast majority of American Catholics are people who are very enamored of Pope Francis. They see him as a leader who will follow in Pope Francis' legacy. And, you know, I think this is a big hit in America.
Yeah, he certainly seems to be kind of well-regarded, a unity candidate, I think maybe slightly more conservative in some areas than Francis, but certainly has the same vision for the church, that pastoral vision that Pope Francis would always talk about. We're actually going to be speaking to members of the clergy in Ireland, others who knew him. So Iggy O'Donovan, the Augustinian priest, was with us on the show yesterday and revealed live on air that he actually knows the new Pope. Bob, he kept calling him, and then correcting himself and saying, I have to stop calling him Bob. I'll have to get used to calling him Pope Leo. But we're going to be speaking to other Irish priests as well who know him, and we'll have to get used to that as well. And James DePari is going to be joining us. He's a priest here from Waltham in Massachusetts, going to be giving us the sense of occasion that this all is in this part of the world. But Jess, we might talk a little bit, and I know you're going to talk about this more as well. Later in the hour, the social media for under 16, Simon Harris, has been talking about it. What's he been saying?
He has used language that sort of arched my eyebrow right away. So in Australia, they've been working on this notion for quite a while to ban social media platforms for those under the age of 16. Now, this is specifically the platforms that require you to have an account. So think X, Instagram, TikTok, and so on. Things like YouTube and gaming platforms are not included as of yet. But speaking about this, Simon Harris said that we need in Ireland to give it due consideration, serious consideration. And he referred to young people and social media as a ticking time bomb. Now, I remember when I was in school and when I was in college, we had Bebo. We had the top 16. I'm a long time out of school. Social media has been around for a long time. To describe it now as a ticking time bomb, to me, the genie is out of the bottle and has been out of the bottle for such a long time. And I don't necessarily know, and we'll get into it later on, that a ban is the right approach. I've been harping to you and to many of our colleagues on News Talk for many, many years about the need for education. I don't see the value in preventing young people from accessing platforms where they can express their creativity, they can learn about the world, they can engage with their friends, if they're shown how to do it. Stopping them and then unleashing them into that world when they're 16 doesn't quite make sense to me. And it's also interesting that what they're proposing to do in Australia is use age verification technology. Mm. Now, this is something that we spoke about earlier in the week in a different guise, but the accuracy and the ability of AI to verify the age of individuals, it's not always 100%. As I said to you earlier in the week, it's great if you're a middle-aged white man, absolutely rock on. But for everybody else in the world, it can struggle. So I would have some reservations there. But look, it's a good debate to have, right?
Yeah, we will have that debate a little bit later in the hour from the Irish point of view. But Adrian, I wonder, is this kind of an issue that gets much airtime in this part of the world, or the kind of the associated debate we often have in Ireland is less about banning access to social media and rather maybe banning phones in schools? That's the other discussion.
Yeah, the American version of this debate has been trying to ban TikTok. You know, there was this bill in Congress that passed to try to force the sale of TikTok because supposedly it's so toxic for young people. Trump wiped this out the second he was inaugurated and claimed he'd cut this deal, so that's dead for now. And yeah, the American version of this debate for now is cell phones in schools in general. You know, there are school districts that have experimented with banning phones and claim they've had great results. And the push here is sort of to get phones out of classrooms as opposed to banning it altogether.
And in those school districts, how do they do it? Is it just a kind of a voluntary thing? Parents and everybody signs up to a code, or do they, you know, there's lock boxes we've seen in some schools, there's these kind of magnetic pouches that
phones are like lock boxes, and you know, yeah, they kind of collect the phones at the door, and you know,
all right,
you can't text in English class.
But that approach is good, right? Because you're teaching the young people how and when to use the device, and you're teaching them the appropriate places to use it and the inappropriate places to use it. Straight out bans. Like, this technology exists, right? And right. I just think we have to be a bit more creative in our approach.
But isn't that, sorry, I don't want to kind of give too much away the debate, but isn't that the narrative that the big social media companies and the tech companies want us to propagate? Because what that means is we keep selling the devices, you keep creating more users. You know,
But it's going to happen when they're 16 anyway.
Make it about education.
It's going to happen when they're 16 anyway, right? And I think what we need to do, and I've been banging this drum for years, we need to implement a proper digital education, digital safety, and it needs to start at primary school level. Secondary school is too late. So I think if we did that, also educate the parents. The amount of times parents get on to me saying, I'm lost here when it comes to kids and technology, I don't know what to do. I think education has to be the answer.
All parents know less about technology than their 12-year-old kids.
Yeah,
yeah, well, that is absolutely the truth. Listen, we will get into it a bit more later in the hour. But we've mentioned Donald Trump already. Let's talk about him again. He signaled yesterday, we chatted about it here yesterday, Adrian, this a trade deal between the US and the UK. How did he describe it? The UK is now in our economic and security blanket. Anyway, some weird.
It says something that none of us can remember.
It was a blanket of some description, and it was very, very comfortable. I remember
a great external and internal relationship. You described it as well. I'm really unsure about what that means. But today he has been, in the last couple of hours, talking about China, and he has been suggesting on Truth Social as well that these 145% tariffs might get cut in half almost.
Well, they're going to get cut by more than half because they're just not sustainable. And, you know, China has not been willing to play ball. They're not lining up to cut a deal. And American industry depends on goods from China.
So he took this Truth Social, and what he posted was, you know, as ever, kind of vague. 80% tariff on China seems right, up to Scott B, which is the Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. So, it's you know, is
seems
this an
right.
expression of U.S. policy? Is this just Donald Trump tweeting effectively? We don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think the policy right now is that the United States is backing down. Trump is backing down, and you know, we'll see where it lands. And I believe it will be substantially less than 80%.
So do you see, because this is what I guess everybody was hoping when he announced the 90-day pause for the rest of the world and these 10% tariffs, what people hoped was that this was Donald Trump slowly reversing out of tariffs. He'd been spooked by the bond markets, as had people around him been spooked, and, you know, he didn't want to admit defeat immediately, but he would slowly reverse out. And this is maybe another aspect of that, is it?
Yeah, I mean, the issue is that the bond markets were only the beginning. You know, there's also the stock market, and just what the tariffs were going to do to consumer prices in the United States was untenable.
And has there been any impact on that already in the United States?
It's been limited because so much of what he threatened has been reversed or hasn't taken effect yet. But it was coming, and when you destroy the supply chains, everything soars. And that's what he's got to stay away from.
We spoke on the show as well to Jerry McDermott earlier in the week, who's a Republican politician from this part of the world. And he was asking us to try and understand all of this in the context of China being the number one enemy of the United States. You know, we have to frame all of our understanding of what Trump is doing in that context. Is that how other Americans view the world?
Absolutely not. We just woke up one day to discover that China was this huge enemy, and Canada, of all places, was an enemy. And most Americans were like, why are we in a trade war with Canada? What did they do? That is definitely not the prevailing sentiment among Americans.
Well, let me ask you about the prevailing sentiment amongst Americans about invading Greenland. Come on, surely you're up for that, Adrian.
What for? Why?
Greenland's
just
security?
There minding their own business, doing whatever, you know, growing Christmas trees or something. Why would we invade them?
Jess, this all, though, feeds into what we have been talking about here this week, you know what I mean, which is this kind of transatlantic trade picture and what everybody's been talking about, be it Irish-Canada trade, Irish-US trade, US-Canada, is our businesses, big businesses and small, I'm sure, as well, just sitting on their hands. It's a wait and see. Let's not make any decisions yet because we don't know what's coming. And this is another perfect example of it. If you're trying to make plans and you've got products that are coming from China, they're being assembled elsewhere, they're being exported into the United States, imported into it, I guess, from our point of view here today, you don't know what to think. No, you can't put a price on what your product's going to be in 6 months' time.
No, you can't. And you also don't know, if you can produce a product that maybe is in a blueprint stage, right? You don't know if you're going to be able to bring out new hardware. You don't know if you're going to be penalised for it. I think what we're going to see, though, Kieran, is the true resilience of some businesses, because businesses have been kind of, you mentioned Bernard Dunn, they've been kind of doing that boxer move of ducking and diving to try and assess how they can survive in this climate. I think what's fascinating is, you know, early doors when there was talk of tariffs, there was an exemption for smartphones, laptops, you know, e-readers, whatever it is, they were going to be exempt. What's not an exemption for, though, is the parts. So there are itty-bitty parts in every single device that you have in your home or around you right now. And if President Trump wants those products that are very successful to be manufactured in the US, they need to take into account the importing of the parts. And that's where it's going to get impossible. And, you know, talking about China and the attitude towards China, there are so many innovation races going on. We spoke about the humanoid robots the other day. Recently on the show, we talked about China's DeepSeek artificial intelligence platform. There's a huge race to be the leader of innovation between the United States and China. And at the moment, it's just impossible to see how the United States can maintain any of their titles and any place or any of their dominance in this race when there is so much uncertainty.
Yeah.
This also ties into what we were talking about yesterday about Trump and higher education, because so much of our technology comes out of higher education, you know, comes out of the research done in places like Harvard and MIT. So in many ways, he's killing America's ability to innovate.
Yeah. Well, speaking of kind of cuts to public institutions like that, I mentioned we're going to be down at the JFK Library, or you're going to hear our visit a little bit about it. And that place had to close as well because of funding cuts for a short time, although they've managed to reopen the doors now. Thankfully. Before we wrap things up, Adrian, can I just ask about the next stage in the Trump presidency? Again, you know, we're all kind of interpreting this from the outside, and we have much more, we pay much more attention to those foreign policy issues, you know, trade wars and relationships with, you know, China, with what's happening in Gaza, with the kind of war in Ukraine and tentative peace deals and everything else. Within the US, we had a guest on recently who said, you know, after a few months, he's going to get bogged down in domestic issues. It's just what happens. You've got kind of midterm elections looming. You've got to get budgets passed. Is that what you think is going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, it just feels like the pace of what's going on now is not sustainable. I can't imagine 4 years of this kind of craziness on a daily basis. So I think things will begin to calm down as he begins. But, you know, the domestic issues are largely of his own making. We don't know yet how the economy is all going to shake out, given the tariffs and the other things we've been talking about. But yeah, I do think there will be a little bit of a settling in
all
the
right.
months to come.
Well, listen, I said that Jess is going to be back with us before the hours I talking about this proposal of a social media ban for under 16s. Teachers, after getting in touch, is this another matter for teachers to have to do with? What about parental responsibility? And somebody else says, how do you educate about social media? Media education isn't the problem. When you are being bombarded with so much rubbish, how do you educate against that? And I completely disagree, and I'm really fed up of listening to this defeatist attitude that the genie's out of the bottle. Jess, you've disappointed this listener.
Sorry.
Education alone will not work. Children will always try to cross boundaries. Also, Bebo was harmless compared to today's platforms. Jess, I know you want to respond.
I'm not letting you,
because you're going to be back in about half an hour to talk about it. In the meantime, Adrian Walker, thank you so much for joining us again, Adrian, associate editor and columnist of the Boston Globe. Jess Kelly, our tech correspondent, who will be back.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.